The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So in talking a little bit about working with anger, practicing with anger, there has to be a reason to work with it. There has to be a purpose or a goal or something to bring mindfulness or practice with it. Why practice with it? You could say practice with it because we bring mindfulness to whatever is happening. It's just, that's one of the things happening, so we practice with it. But, you know, anger is a little bit of a challenging thing to practice with, to bring mindfulness to. So it's worthwhile looking at it more deeply. Why is it difficult? What are the challenges of being present for it when it comes up? Another reason for looking more deeply at anger, or practicing with it, working with it, is so that we're not caught by it. Hindrance, whenever something's a hindrance, we're basically caught by it. So whether the anger is justified or not, or whether it's clean anger in a sense or not, if we're caught by it and preoccupied by it, then it becomes a barrier to developing greater presence and mindfulness. And so we need to overcome the hindrance, regardless of whether it's justifiable or not. Then overcoming a hindrance doesn't necessarily mean the anger goes away, but it's no longer hindering. So we have to work with it enough so it doesn't interfere with us, or it doesn't run us, so it's not in charge. And then in Buddhism, in Buddhist English, anger is always understood to be connected to ill will, to hostility. And so it's not a good thing to carry hostility or ill will within oneself. It has bad effects on us. It entails suffering for ourselves. It then sets up causes and conditions into the future that are harmful for ourselves and harmful for others. And so if we want to create the conditions for a healthy and wise life, then we have to somehow overcome the forces of ill will that are operating, the anger that's operating there. So there's lots of reasons for bringing attention and focus and practice to anger. There's many, many ways of working with anger. There's not one way. And some of these work well for some people and not for others. If you look at the classic discussion about working with anger, or ill will in the Buddhist tradition, there are two general ways that I know of for working with anger. Or maybe three, but a few different ways. One is to practice the Brahma Viharas. So to practice loving kindness, practice compassion, practice equanimity in relationship, you know, when the anger is happening. So if you feel some ill will towards someone, try to generate or find a way to have goodwill for that person, to have loving kindness for them. Or perhaps it works easier someone mentioned earlier, is to have compassion for them, to kind of consider somehow that they're suffering and how difficult it is for them, and then somehow that softens our heart towards them, and so to cultivate compassion for that person. So somehow changing our affect, our emotional state, our motivational state, how we see the person, how we're motivated towards the person. And it's quite beautiful to have a easy access to loving kindness or compassion so that the whole situation can be seen in a very different way, very different light of what's most important here. So cultivating and developing loving kindness is a great support for those times when we find ourselves caught by anger, ill will. And we have the loving kindness available. We have those channels inside of us kind of lubricated and open, so it's easier to kind of let it happen. If you don't practice loving kindness much at all, or anything, not at all, then perhaps those channels are not going to be as readily available. The danger with practicing loving kindness or compassion is that it's possible to do kind of spiritual bypass sometimes. It's possible to to somehow not really understand deeply what's actually going on when we get angry. And so without clear, deeper understanding, those tendencies, those forces inside of us are there in the background, ready to rear its head at the moment's notice. Next situation arises. So the conditions are still within us there. So another way of working with anger in the tradition is to reframe it. And so remember, storytelling mind is so important. The story you tell yourselves. They did a study once of, I guess they had these different college students talk about something. And they had these open-ended questions that were leading, so both leading and open-ended, was something like, tell me in what ways you might have been angry about your class this semester. They weren't telling them they should be angry, but in what way might you have been angry? And then the other subjects they'd ask, just tell us about the class. How was it for you? And the ones who they prompted to kind of talk, prompted very openly about talking about the anger, they're the ones in the second part of the experiment exhibited more anger at an aggression and hostility to whatever happened next in the experiment. And that somehow having a chance to talk about it didn't make them less angry, but actually talking about it actually kind of set, they kind of heated up enough so they're more likely to have it. So, what you talk about, what you spend your time doing with your mind is very consequential. If you spend a lot of your time being angry and upset, what conditions are you setting in place? What habits are you developing? How are you predisposing yourself to see the future situations that you're going to be in? So then reframing it is a classic Buddhist thing. And one of the ways of reframing it that the Buddha recommended is to consider what effect the anger has on you. So, on me? Nothing, Me? What do you mean, on me? And so the Buddha gave a list of, I think, seven here, different effects that anger can have on you. Not all of you, but some of you. When you get angry, you'll look ugly. You'll be in pain. You'll make mistakes. You'll lose your property. You fall into dispute and disgrace. You'll lose your friends, and you'll have a hellish future. So some people, if they see, wow, if that's the effect, I don't think, if I do the cost-benefit analysis, I don't think that I'm coming out ahead here. So in that kind of regard, there's the idea that the Buddha said someplace that when you're angry, you're causing suffering to yourself. You're doing your enemy a favor, because you're causing suffering to yourself that your enemy could never do on their own. No one can get into your heart. Only you can be in your heart. So when you get angry, then you've allowed your enemy into your heart in a way that's causing pain. So and a lot of people have found very valuable that reflection of looking at the cost. There was one of the hostages, English journalist, I think, who were hostage in Lebanon, who asked if something like, were you ever angry at the hostage takers? And he said something like, that no, he never was angry with them because he didn't want to add further suffering to the suffering he already had, or he didn't want to add to this, thing. And so looking at the consequence and framing it, looking at it from that perspective, is helpful for some people. And then there's also looking at the person, the situation we're angry with, or looking at our own anger and seeing it's, you know, it creates bad karma. It creates bad conditions. It's going to cause more suffering. So I can be angry at some person, but when I'm angry at that person, that's going to make the person feel worse. If the person feels worse, that's going to be a condition for them to be more angry or to be more of a jerk. And then it might come back and bite me. So it's in my own self-interest not to aggravate the person. In any case, I don't want this person to suffer more than they are. So that for some people, that kind of almost intellectual kind of rethinking about the situation works very well. Thinking about it in a different way, telling a different story about it, is helpful. For some people, changing the story somehow doesn't cut the mustard. And so then sometimes doing loving kindness or compassion helps. Another option that the Buddha talked about is to stop thinking about the person. Simply stop thinking about it. And sometimes that's wise and sometimes it's not wise. But to the degree to which thinking about it rehearses it and reactivates it, not thinking about it for a while, clearing the air, letting it all settle down, might be useful. And then if there's some real world situation that needs to be addressed, then if we're able to put it down for a while, perhaps we can come back in a clearer mind and deal with it in a more realistic or useful way than dealing it with when we're kind of caught by anger. So a total avoidance, just not thinking about it, sometimes that's one way. But we're not reactivating it. And then the last thing I want to say here, it's not talked about as far as I know so much in the classic Buddhist literature, and that is to be very present for your anger. Don't be for or against it particularly. Just be very present for it. Allow it to be there. And then to investigate it more deeply. Tease apart the different elements of it, what makes it up. And I find it over and over again so useful to see the physical side, the emotional side, the cognitive side, the beliefs, the motivational side. And different situations, different ones of those are really a key. Sometimes the anger we have might be something that needs to be, you know, some reason in the past, some momentum, emotional momentum has been set in motion. And so that momentum has to play itself out. And so for example, if you're bottling up a lot of sadness, sooner or later perhaps you have to cry, you have to let that sadness out and just, you know, the grief out or something and let it come. And it's not a matter of working through anything, it's a matter of just letting it kind of unwind. So the same thing with anger. sometimes anger is just bottled up anger, and the best thing you need to do is just get out of the way of it and just let it kind of play itself out. And one of the best places that I know to do that is in meditation, sitting quietly. It's safe when you don't move. You're not going to act on it. And then to feel it in your body. It's one of the great ways. Then the more I can feel it in my body and be present for the body, the easier it is for that release or that movement to happen. Other times it's useful to look at the emotional aspect of it, because there might be different emotional component parts. As I said earlier, there might be fear, there might be hurt, there might be some sense of threat. You know, maybe you don't feel hurt, but you feel threat coming your way. There might be even some sense of injustice that's a little bit different than those other ones. And so what is that, those feelings that are there? If we kind of delve underneath the anger to those deeper feelings, then what do we explore then? What can we discover then? How do we understand what needs to be done from these deeper feelings? So, for example, a feeling of injustice, maybe a threat to someone's suffering, threat to someone's well-being. When we realize that that's underlying the anger, perhaps there can be a different motivation for doing something about the injustice than doing something based on anger. It can be, compassion can be at least as motivating a force for people than as anger can be. Now, when I give, it's very common when I've given talks about anger. It's almost to be, I can almost expect it. And when I give talks about anger, someone will raise their hand and almost immediately and want to justify anger. Like their first instinct is to justify it. But there are times when anger is really important, really necessary. And I appreciate that point of view, that might be times where it's maybe appropriate. But I'm really struck by how often and quickly people want to come in and justify it. Like this, it's touched a nerve, something there, something very deep nerve. And one of the common justifications for it is that it gets me to do things, makes me fight for justice or get right wrongs or something. And there are other, and it's helpful thinking, very helpful to know there are other very powerful motivations to get to act in the world other than anger. So by teasing apart and finding the roots of what's happening, it sometimes it's easier than to access or come up with other motivations than the motivation that comes from anger. Also, sometimes when you get down and tease it apart and look at what's going on more deeply, we see that it's not the same, it's not what we thought it was originally. So the emotional aspect of anger I find very helpful to get down to some of the deeper roots, deeper kind of, and then there's the cognitive aspects of it, the beliefs and ideas we have. And sometimes that's the most useful place to look. The anger is really clearly arises out of a particular belief or assumption or interpretation of the event. I imagine probably all of you have been in a situation where you have been angry at someone because of what they did. And then you found out actually they didn't do it. You get the full story of what happened and you realize, oh, wait a minute, there's a whole different thing here than I thought. There's no cause for me to be angry at the person. It's just I didn't realize that the person didn't show up for the appointment because she's in the hospital. she was in a car crash on the way to the appointment and, almost died. And I was angry because I assumed that the person stood me up. So we had an interpretation. And it turned out to be false. And so to look at the story, what story do we make? And if we look deeply at the stories that we make, the ideas, the beliefs we have, one of the interesting things is to discover those beliefs that are connected to our self-identity, how we want to define ourselves, how we want to build ourselves up, how we want to represent ourselves to others, how we want other people to see us. So a whole constellation of kind of self-identity beliefs and things that go on. And to some degree, when that's threatened, that can be a source for anger. And you can feel hurt, you can feel afraid, you can feel sad, real emotions. But the genesis of those might be that you have a very strong, unrealistic self-identity that you're clinging and holding on to. And so then it might be more useful to look at the self-definition or our values, what we believe is important. There might be a whole series of things that we think is important. Our society might teach us that certain things are important, that this is what it means to be a human being, is to be this way. And if you don't have that, then you're a failure as a human being. So if that's being threatened, then you get angry. So there's a whole cognitive part to look at more deeply and understand. If anger repeats itself over and over again around the same topic, over and over again, sometimes the cognitive piece is the most useful thing to look at, to understand better. So there's these different elements, and at different times we look at the different ones. When we do mindfulness meditation, one of the guidelines for deciding where to look is to try to look at that which keeps you, that part that keeps you caught, that part that keeps you from really letting your mindfulness be present and free of what you're noticing. So it might take a while to come to that. But the very process of looking for where is it that I keep getting caught? What is it pulls me away? What is it that causes me to lose my mindfulness? That itself is good practice. And then as you find that, then you find maybe where you need to ground your attention and focus more. So so 9:30 to 3:30 is too short of a time to talk about such a huge topic. I apologize for maybe opening the door without helping you close it properly. In talking about anything in practice, we're talking here about anger today. In the context of Buddhist practice, doing a mindfulness practice or Buddhist practice, my hope is that the context from which it's being explored and held and looked at is one of care, of compassion, one of confidence that there's a path, there's a way to work through this, of being free, that it's not just kind of opening the door of this kind of very difficult stuff just to feel the difficulty, but it's really motivated by a real care, compassionate care for oneself, for the world, for others. And so as we delve into things which sometimes are quite difficult, then we don't forget that there is perhaps some caring or compassion or loving kindness that is the very reason for which we're doing this kind of sometimes very difficult work. If we had another 15 minutes or 10 minutes, I would have ended the day with a round of loving kindness practice. So when you go home tonight, you might finish the day on your own by doing a little bit of loving kindness practice for yourself and for others. And I have up here the handouts, and these are the practices and reflections for this next month. And I was told by someone that it was kind of confusing the way I did it before, just one whole sheet of reflections and one whole sheet of practices. So I divided it up so that each week for the next 4 or 5 weeks, there's a reflection and a practice. So you clear this week, you do this reflection. This week, you do this practice. And then you move on to the next one the following week. And if you'd like to do these things, if you want to go into it more deeply. And some of this will be repeat what we've done here today. And I think it's useful to kind of go over it more deeply or again. And then I think next time we meet, in the end of February, we do sloth and torpor. So here you go.
Will there be a beginner contest of four-way tie?
No.
Oh,
four-way tie? Well, I guess so. Everyone won.
Tie.
And then actually, one more thing, if I may, before we end. As we always do, I like very much that we're set up here. That's the very people who practice at IMC who also take care of IMC. So that periodically when you come here for days like this, if you could stay behind to help 10 minutes or so to tidy up, clean up from the day, the bathrooms, the vacuuming, that's very much appreciated. And may you have merry hindrances for the next month.